we'll get started in a minute or so. I always think it's worth saying that this show, because it's a show with so many IT pros, that just in case you saw the title but didn't read the description too closely, this is aimed at developers, this talk. So I'm talking about developing apps using networking, the various things you can use to help build out apps. So if that doesn't kind of fit what you were expecting, obviously now's the time to go and find something more suitable for what you want. So just to make sure you're all in the right room. Okay, right, let's get this underway. If I can find my clicker. I've got an insane amount of material I want to talk through, so I'm going to keep the pace up quite a bit. So this is called the Windows 8.1, Windows Phone 8.1 Networking Survival Kit. And this is a survival kit just in the sense that I'm going to run through a lot of advice and an overview of a lot of the technologies that you've got to help build out apps that incorporate networking. I'm Andy Wigley. I'm a technical evangelist who works out of the UK. I'm very happy to be over here to do a few talks in the Windows and Windows Phone track for you. I've just recorded 2.5 days of videos. I don't know if any of you did. Any of you see the jumpstart? A couple there. Yes. Oh, thank you, Mr. Tiffany, at the back there. Good. So 2.5 days of videos. These are all about building apps for Windows Phone 8.1, and runs you right through getting to know building with the Windows Runtime XAML, and then through all of the APIs, including some of the ones I'm going to talk about this morning. So what I'm going to talk about is, first of all, obviously the basics about networking support in Windows Phone 8.1. I'm going to talk about how you should use, obviously, higher level abstractions wherever you can. You know, there's obviously times where it's appropriate to go right down to HTTP and do everything yourself, but there's a huge number of APIs that are there just to make your life easier. And there's whole systems that are there to make your life easier. And one of them, of course, is Azure Mobile Services. I'm just going to do an intro to that. There's other talks at this conference which are going in deep on the new stuff they've got coming out there. So obviously they're the ones where you want to get real in-depth knowledge about that. But I'm going to just give you an intro as far as it applies to Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1. I'll talk about sharing state across your Windows and Windows Phone apps. We've got roaming data, which is a really cool way, and it's kind of an essential ingredient, I think, of those kind of apps. Talk about that. Yes, we are going to drop down HTTP client, where you really need to sort of get down in the weeds and do some low-level networking. We'll look at that. I'm going to wrap up with a look at some of the things we've got with authentication. So a brief mention of credential locker, and then looking at the web authentication broker. So loads of stuff, loads of demos, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. So first of all, just about the basics. Obviously, mobile devices, in a broad sense, we tend to forget this, and that actually they are often on a poor quality network. We had problems with the Wi-Fi at the conference yesterday. I don't know, it seems to be okay today. I don't know what you're finding. But yeah, no, it's not okay today. Well, there you go. So there you go. Just shows, you know, just shows you cannot rely on a good connection, and you have to build apps with that in mind. And people too readily forget this. And also, this different networks have different costs associated with it. We have roaming costs occasionally if you're traveling outside of your home country. Again, in the US, you don't get that so much. But at the moment in Europe, you travel from one country to another, which in one country in Europe, it tends to be smaller than one of your states, you know? And then you switch from one provider to another, and you get into roaming costs. Now, the EU is doing away with that. So from next year, we're going to have roaming costs are going to be not allowed. So it's going to be one, we're going to have one big kind of big network the same way you do, which is really nice. But, you know, people are roaming and there's different costs. They could be on their cellular data plan. And also, you've got to remember, of course, you're building apps that are being sold worldwide. So you can't think of your own market and just project that to everywhere else. There's a lot of countries where, you know, we have over here and in Europe, data costs are pretty reasonable. But in a lot of countries, they're watching every penny, every cent on their data bills and need to keep that under control. So you need to think about that as well. And also, you need to think about when you're working offline, about caching data locally and giving a good user experience. You know, even the conference app, actually, the schedule builder thing, it's kind of annoying that you go in there and it immediately wants to resync. What it should do is work with cached data and then resync afterwards. rather than you have to wait. And when you've got a poor network, you've got a poor user experience. That sort of thing, you know, you've got to think about and not building frustration into your apps for users. So I was thinking about using higher level abstractions. We've got a ton of stuff that makes your job easier. So don't always think you've got to get right down and figure out the protocol and do HTTP calls and all this kind of get the right headers and all this sort of thing, because there's a lot of stuff there that will make your life easier. Azure in itself, obviously building cloud services with Azure, you can obviously build out web servers, websites and brokers, and you can build out your whole infrastructure yourself. But for many apps, this package platform, package solution, Microsoft Azure Mobile Services, is ideal for what you want. And it's really easy to set up, and the costs are very reasonable. We've also got Azure Notification Hubs. If you want to send notifications from your back-end logic to clients, and I'm talking about clients in a very broad sense, so all of this stuff in Azure is very much a solution for cross-vendor solution, for multi-vendor platforms. So all of these things, Azure Mobile Services and Notification Hubs, are just as happy working with iOS and with Google notifications as they are with our stuff. So, and Xamarin and HTML5 as well. So all of those clients are supported. Background transfer, going back down to the WinRT API. So we've got in Windows 8.1 and in Windows Phone 8.1, we've got a background transfer service. We had one in Windows Phone 8.0 as well, but this is a new one, which is better. I'm not going to talk about that in too much detail, but that is an easy to program service where you can ask the OS to take care of downloading a file for you or uploading a file back to a server. And then your app can be suspended, and the OS just takes care of finishing that transfer off for you. So much easier than writing all that code yourself. It's easy to program, and you'd really be a fool not to use it if you're transferring anything that's kind of file, anything that's more than a few bytes or message-oriented networking. Web authentication broker, I am going to talk about this. That's if you need to ever authenticate against a provider using OAuth, OAuth 2, that's kind of hard to do. So we've now got the web authentication broker that takes the pain out of that. I'll show you that. And so this is going down all the stacks. And then by the time you've kind of excluded any of these, they don't fit your needs, well then, yeah, we might need to do some raw HTTP, and we've got a great API that allow you to do that. So I'm going to start by looking at a quick introduction to Azure Mobile Services. Now, I'm sure you all kind of know roughly what it does. It's an easy thing. You can build out this back end in the cloud. But maybe what you haven't come across is they added fairly recently some tooling into Visual Studio that makes it easy to work to create these things and work with them. You don't really have to go off to the Azure portal very much. So I'm going to show you that. So what it is, it's an offering in Microsoft Azure that allows you to build and host the back end of your mobile app up in the cloud very easily. It's really easy to set up. It's very flexible. Loves anybody's client. Like I said, iOS, Android, Windows, HTML5. Your back end logic. So you get a database which can be SQL Azure or it can be Oracle or SAP or MongoDB. So that's your back-end data storage up in the cloud, and then what you get is a RESTful API in front of it that allows you to perform CRUD operations against tables in that database. And those create, read, update, delete operations have scripts associated with them, and the scripts can be in C#, .NET, so it's a web API-based coding, or it can be in Node.js. It was Node.js until recently. We've just recently added .NET support as an alternative. And then it's got loads of great stuff for authenticating against whatever social provider you wish or against Azure Active Directory. And that's extensible as well. You can also have agents that run in the background to do repetitive jobs. So, you know, might be looking for some events that are happening, whatever your app is about, something you need to notify mobile users about. And then when you need to notify them, it's really easy to send push notifications from your back end. So it's got all of the ingredients that most kind of, you know, for most apps that if you have some kind of shared data up in the cloud and some kind of top score table or pretty simple but relatively straightforward Data storage and sharing data between clients, it's a really great solution, really easy to set up. And it comes with an enterprise-grade SLA as well. So we got this new tooling in Visual Studio 2013, where you can now, in the add menu, which seems to be growing all the time, you can now add this thing called a connected service. And that will connect up to Windows Azure. And you can add an existing connected service or a new one. So in the services manager that comes up, you can create a mobile service. And then after you've created it, what it does is it adds all the references into your project. It's really easy. All the stuff that you could do manually, but it just makes it really easy. It's all automated for you. And it hooks code in. It gives you a client class that you use, a proxy for talking to the service. And it adds a reference to that into your app.xaml.cs. So you're all kind of ready to go. I'll show you this in a moment. And then you can create tables. Do it right from Visual Studio. You haven't even been to Windows Azure yet. Create tables, and you can edit the server scripts from Visual Studio as well. And then you write some simple code. So here's an example of getting a table called a to-do item. And then you new up an object, a to-do item, set some properties on it, and then call to-do table.insert async. So that's simple code for working with tables that happen to be up in Azure, up in the cloud. And you can add push notifications easily as well to your app. And it does all of the fairly complicated configuration stuff that you could do manually. But why bother? It gives it to you on a plate. And there's much, much more as well. Obviously, add the authentication against various different identity providers. You can add filtering by user. So obviously, you've got a table in a database in the cloud, but you want to make sure each user's data is separate. So you can filter by key values or by owner. You can customize all those scripts, the create, read, update, delete ones, to implement your business logic in the cloud. And it is extensible as well. You can link in your custom code and implement these scheduled background tasks. Now, all that's very nice. And up until recently, I kind of say, it's all right. But like I said right at the beginning of this talk, mobile devices have to work offline. They have to. We would love it if they didn't, but the realities of life is that they do. And you want to give some kind of an experience to your users when they're offline. So mobile services until recently was kind of, it's all right, but it doesn't work offline. Now it works offline. So they've got a SQLite database on the client where they're storing, because SQLite is, again, cross-vendor, so this fits in with the cross-vendor approach to all this stuff, where you can store your data in there and cache the data in there, and you can work offline, and then when you get a connection back, it will sync the changes back up to the server. Now, that's not available for Windows Phone 8.1 just yet, but it is available in preview for Windows 8.1. And Mr. Rob Tiffany in the back far corner there, if you come along tomorrow morning at 8:30, is that right? Yeah, he's going to show you a bit of that.
Make sure you're all here.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't miss it. All right, let's show you a bit of the this tooling here. All right, so here we've got a little app. I'm going to run it on the emulator. It's a tasks app. And as it is at the moment, it functions to a degree. I've got an object in here called a task item. There you go. It's got some properties on it. ID, title, description, due date, and assigned to. And you can sort of add stuff here. And that sort of thing. And you can assign it to somebody, and then you can say, save it. It doesn't work at the moment because I haven't got any functionality there. And it's completely, there's no data persistence, so it's kind of just the first pass of an app that we want to cloud enable. So let's go ahead and do just that. So I'm going to add a back end to this. So we can right click on our project and say add connected service. And this is bringing up the services manager. It's already, if you weren't logged in, it would ask you for your Microsoft account credentials, but I'm already logged in Visual Studio, so we've got this single sign-on, so or whatever credentials you've registered with Microsoft Azure. So we can actually create a whole new service here. So I'm going to select my the right subscription, give it a name. I'm going to call this Jump Start Demo. This is what I did in the Jump Start. The back end can be .NET or JavaScript. I'm going to go for the JavaScript. Then you want to say, okay, a region. I'm going to go for North Europe, where I live. I've already got a database there, but you could create a new one. And then I've already got a... remember what the password is. And what it's going to do is create a database for my back-end service in my database server that I've got running in Azure. And this is just the same as you would do through the portal. So it's chuntering away in the background, and it will just take a few seconds, and we will get our service in the cloud. Can take sort of up to a minute. He's saying up to, hopefully, it doesn't take any longer. So, and when that is done, well, you're then going to add a table and that sort of thing. So that's taking a long time. Come on. So I'm not on the Wi-Fi. I'm on a plugged-in connection here. So that's taking a while. It's obviously taking a long time to go all the way over to North Europe and back. Come on. What can you do? Sit and watch it. Oh, thank you. Right, I was just thinking, what else should I show them while we're waiting for this? Right, here we go. Now, we've got our service that's been created. I'm going to OK that. And at this point, it's now integrating my current solution, my project, with that service. So actually what it has done is, if we go down to app.xaml.cs, well, it's added a load of references, first of all. So we've now got... Microsoft Windows Azure Mobile, and blah, blah, and a few other bits and pieces. And but it's also added a little bit of code here, which is this stuff here. So we've got a link you can follow to get some information. But it's given this mobile service client instance, which is called Jumpstart Demo Client, and it's configured it with the key and the address of our service up in the cloud. So that is all ready to go. We can actually open up Server Explorer, and if we expand this, you can see all our mobile services. That other one, Jumpstart To Do Live, was one I did with Windows Phone 8.0 eons ago. And there's my this is the one we've just created. We need to I need to add a table to it. So I've just got the CRUD services, I've got the server, I've got a database, haven't got a table yet. So I want a table to store my to-do items in. So I'm going to create a table. I'm going to call it task item. I'm going to create that up in the cloud. And when that's done, so hopefully we won't have to watch it creating as long as it did before, we will have a table in the cloud, and we'll have some scripts associated with each of the operations. That's refreshing. There we go. And there's our table. And these are all the scripts. So, here's an insert script. You can edit them here, make your changes if you like. There we go. I'm not going to, because that's fine. So you can work from all this. And the other thing you can do from Server Explorer as well is you can go off to... open in the management portal, you can go off to the portal and have a look at that. So here we are, this is back in more familiar territory perhaps. So there's my, this is the kind of dashboard for my service. There's my data, here's my table I just created, task item, which has got two indices. So we can drill into that and have a look at, obviously you can edit your scripts in here as well. Have a look at the columns. It's got no data in it at the moment because obviously we haven't sent anything. But actually, everything gets a key column. So you get an index, and then you have three other columns, which is created at, updated at, and version, which is all about the change tracking, which is the offline support stuff. But we've only got an ID column, and if you remember back in Visual Studio, my task item, sure, it has an ID column. But I've actually got these other four as well. So what do we do? How do we want to create those other columns to store this other thing? Well, one really nice thing about this is that it has this thing called a dynamic schema. So all we have to do is send a JSON package, a packet of one of these items up to the cloud, and it will dynamically create the columns in my database to match what we send it, which is nice, obviously, during development. Perhaps not so great, later on. You probably want to turn that feature off before you actually deploy. All right, so we're in good shape, really. So I'm now going to add some code. Go off to my main page, .xaml.cs, so we can actually send some stuff. I'm going to add a method into here, which is JSAMS get tasks. Try that again. Okay, so this is a method that is going to go using my Jumpstart demo client. I'm going to get all the items that are in that table from the cloud, and then just going to show them on the screen. That's what that's going to do. So I need to call that from somewhere. Navigation helper load state. Let's put it in there. Get task items. All right, so that's going to... That should show anything on the screen. And then I need to go over and add the save logic as well into this one. So let's go off to newtask.xaml. This is the page where you actually can add tasks into it. I'm going to put another snippet into here as well, which is JSAMS insert tasks. So this is going to, I need to fix up a couple of references. This is the logic that actually is going to put a record up into the cloud. So that should be good. And then I need a little bit of logic to actually call that when we, await. And that's because it's an await, I need to put async on there. Insert task item. So that's going to insert it up to the cloud, and then we say if, because we now have done with this page, if frame dot can go back, frame dot go back. All right, so actually I think we probably should be in good shape to actually have this do something more interesting now. So here we go. We're going to insert some records. So we've got no tasks showing at the moment. I can go off now and add some tasks. So let's say the attendee party. Should be good. That's one nice thing. I noticed. Notice I type in directly into the emulator. You couldn't do that in Windows Phone 8. You can do it in Windows Phone 8.1. So you used to have to. You can get rid of the keyboard. You can do page down. No, yeah, page down and it disappears, but you don't even have to do that anymore. I will leave it down, though. And we're going to assign that to me, and then tick, and there we go. We've got a task, and, just to prove that it actually is up in the cloud, obviously we save it up and run the app again and should get it. And there's our task. Up in the cloud, we can see that now. We can browse the... data that's in it, up in the cloud. There we go. We've got one record in our table up in Azure. So that's pretty nice. What else can we do with this? We could add something else. So we can add push notifications to this as well. So I'm going to say next on this, and then I have to sign in with my account. And unfortunately, it's now going to say it's going to send me a code because of all this two-factor authentication stuff. And it's going to, hopefully, this is a little bit of a risky thing, so I'm going to hope that this is going to come through very quickly on. Oh, there we go, straight away. Thank you so much. So I put my code in here, which is 5845843, submit. And it's checking the account. And now it says, this is kind of, you're now associating your app with the store. So we need to reserve a new app name or create or use one that we've got before. Let's have a Tech Ed Push demo, can be the reserved name. Let's reserve that one. Yep. So we've got that in the one, and then we say next, and then in a minute it's going to say, okay, which service do you want to link your app up to for push notifications? And it's obviously this one, which we've been working with, say next. It then says, I'm going to do all this stuff. So it's going to, it sets it up in WNS. It puts the right kind of secrets and everything into the app. The app is associated with the store, and it sets up the push notification support in the cloud, and all with just a few clicks. And, you know, you could do all that step by step, but this is the easy way of doing it. And at the end of it, it's showing us a new notifyallusers.js, which is up in the cloud, which is just a function that by default sends Hello World back to you. And it's also set into, it's put a new method into my client-side app, which is this upload channel, where we go and get a push notifications channel, we register it with our cloud service, and then actually we're just going to invoke that API, which is the one, the Hello World one, just to show that it actually is working. So it's kind of a calling us back when we've actually sent our push notification channel ID up to the cloud. And thereafter, obviously, you'd write some logic to actually send push notifications when you need to. And that push, this method here, upload channel, is referenced from app.xaml. It's added this onto the end of my app on launched method. So, if we do that, we should get a push notifications channel. So, at the moment, it's asking for a push note. It's going off to the cloud. It's getting a list of tasks back. At the moment, it's not doing anything. So, we should get our list come back in a minute. There we go, from the cloud. And it's also getting a push notifications channel, and we'll send it back. And we've got our sample toast, which is the Hello World one. So, that's twice, in fact. There you go. So there you go. That's kind of how easy it was to configure. Three times. What's going on? I know. I keep launching the app, don't I? Yeah. So of course you tap the toast, it launches the app again, which does on launch, and it sent. So yeah, you get the idea. There you go. Confused myself there, which is easy to do. All right. Okay. So that's the first thing. Now I want to talk again about sort of cool stuff that you can do that's been given to you that's easy to take advantage of. But this is not only cool, but it's actually quite important. So we've got this obviously new stuff in 8.1 where it's easy to build a universal app where you've got a phone client and a tablet PC client. Wonderful. And you share loads and loads of code. Now, that's good from a developer's point of view in terms of it's easy to build these things and you can share 90% of the WinRT, 95% is all the same and it's great and we can build these beautiful apps, lovely. But from a user experience point of view, one of the side effects of all of this, if you like, is that first of all that they would buy the app or get it for free if it's for free. Let's say they buy the app on the tablet and then they can go and download the phone app, the companion app, if you like, for free, even though that would have a price on it. So you get this, shared identity across the two. Now, and that's fine as well. So now they've got your app running on all their devices, but what they won't like is if they do something on the phone app and then they run the tablet app and the tablet app doesn't know anything about it. So, well, yeah, you could use Azure Mobile Services as a common kind of, you know, your repository in the cloud, so both apps would be hitting Azure Mobile Services and getting the same stuff down. But actually for lightweight stuff as well, if you don't want to use Azure Mobile Services, maybe some settings, preferences, this sort of thing. You want those to roam across those different apps, and that's what roaming data is all about. So we got these roaming settings and the roaming folder. So user gets your app and installs it on multiple devices, and then these settings are going to roam across the two. The way you do that is you saw that reserving an app name thing I did in Azure Mobile Services, Right. Well, if you when you reserve a name, you reserve a name, and then you, later on you associate your app with the store, which is actually was kind of hidden in that wizard, but that's what it was doing at the, that when you select the name, you're associating it with your store. If you simply when you and you have to do that for both your tablet app and for your phone app. And if you when you do that, you choose the same reserved name, then they're linked. And there's this thing called this PFN. Package family name. That's kind of an internal tech detail, but all you need to know is that they use the same shared name. And then this roaming data thing can happen. So the idea is that you've got your phone app and you've got your Windows app, and we've got these three, both of them using Windows.storage, the WinRT APIs for working with files and settings. You've got the local folder, which is just local to the device. And really, for settings point of view and files, you only want to store stuff in there that is specific to the app running on that particular device. Settings, you should always write them into roaming settings. So roaming settings, it's exactly the same programming, it's just a string value dictionary, so you use it the same way as you would local settings, but if you put it into roaming settings, then it will automatically roam across the user's devices. And you've got the temp folder, which is, as its name suggests, you can just put stuff in there, and it's just there temporarily. The OS might clear that out at any time. At the local folder, by the way, it also gets backed up overnight in Windows Phone 8.1, backed up to OneDrive overnight. So you've got that storage thing. So in the roaming folder, you can put files and you can put settings. And stuff roams. There's this sync engine which transfers the data periodically based on various triggers. You've got a limit, though, of only 100K. 100K for this. So that doesn't get taken off the user's OneDrive quota. But what happens if you try and save more than 100K? Well, it doesn't change the way your app will work. It will still work against the roaming APIs, will still work. It just means the data won't get roamed. Until you drop down below that 100K. So you need to be aware of those limitations. Whenever it's any data settings get roamed up to the cloud, then any other apps that happen to be running, well, it uses push notifications actually to notify them. You actually get an event that fires in your app to say data's been changed. So you can then refresh the view if happens to be using your app on two devices at the same time, which is a bit unlikely, but... It's just an object, a string object data thing. So anything object you store in there needs to be serializable because it will under the wrappers it will serialize it and then save it up into the cloud. So the question is, can users see that if they go to their OneDrive folder? Actually, I'm not sure. It doesn't come off their quota, it would not make sense if it was visible to them, really. If they delete it, I guess the next time you run the app, it would save it up there again, and it would be a degraded user experience, perhaps, but it wouldn't actually break anything. On Windows 8.1, there's a special key value you can use called high priority, which means this is really important. I want you to really save this quickly, because there's a bit of a lag otherwise. That works fine for Windows 8.1. You can still use that key value on phone 8.1, but it doesn't actually make any difference. Phones being slightly less, perhaps, connected than tablet PCs. And then you can read it out, obviously, using the key. This current data changed event, this is what fires. If your app happens to be live at the time that the data is changed in the cloud, you get this push notification. Will come down to the phone. You don't actually, you don't see this, but what will happen in your app is you get this current data changed event will fire, so you can refresh your settings. So the tips, you've only got 100K, so don't think that this is a massive kind of data synchronization engine. It's for sort of quick settings. It's all about a good user experience. And the last writer wins, so it's not a good sync engine. So it's just the last writer wins, and you've got this high priority setting for Windows. Now, I've got a fun little demo, which hopefully will show how this works. This is a simple... I've got a friend called Rob Miles, who some of you may know. He's an MVP. And we've worked on a number of jump starts over the years, and he's a typical mad professor. He's kind of Monty Python personified. And all these demos involve cheese. This is one of his. So it's called Cheese Warning for no other reason than he has to get cheese into demos. So I could change it to something more sensible, but I thought, well, hey, why not? So the idea is we've got in this solution, it's a universal app. I've got a Windows 8.1 head, Windows Phone 8.1 head, which haven't either, both of them got very little in apart from the app manifest. And I have associated these with the store, so they have got the same reserved app name. I've already done all that. And then they've actually got one page in it, which is this guy, a main page, which is shared between the two. And it's very simple. The idea is that, let me show you the code. Is that we are just using the settings. So we got the roaming settings. When we set a warning that we're running out of cheese, this is his thinking. We need a warning that goes across all our devices that the cheese is running short in the larder. So we need to have a warning to go across all our devices. But all we're doing is storing into the roaming settings with a key of I am using this high priority one, purely because if I don't, nothing much happens in the demo. So this is like, I'm trying to, this is kind of, you know, it's you're at the mercy of the sync engine. So in order to get something to actually happen. So we just set a value into there, which happens to be a string called set, or a value that is clear. And we've got the buttons on the screen that do that. I've set this up to run. I've got the set the startup projects. I'm running multiple startup projects. I'm running them both. I'm running the Windows 8.1 app without debugging, and I am debugging the Windows Phone one. And I'm going to run it on a real device because it needs to be logged in to your Microsoft account. So I've got, there's my device. So let's just start this running. And the desktop one will come up in a minute. Here we go. And actually the phone one is running as well, because the over here on the phone, let's bring the phone up. There we go. And we've hit the, we're just on Navigator 2. When we come into the page, we update the status. So I'm now going to, so you can see both of them at the same time. Let's drop that onto there. There we go. And bring our, there we go. So. So the phone one, we can set the warning. Now, in order to, when you're debugging these things, so it will at some point when it feels like it, it will sync that up to the cloud. And actually, I'm going to kind of prompt it to do that by going off to Visual Studio and actually terminate. I'm going to suspend it, and then I'm going to. Turn the screen off, so it actually doesn't show on the USB projection client, weirdly, but actually the screen is off, and that should, in a minute, on the right, you should see that change to set, as the settings will get roamed across, and of course I've got an event handler in the shared code, so whenever the settings are changed in the cloud, it will the app that's running will get an event, the data changed event, and it will, in a minute, go set, won't it? In a minute, and like I said, this is kind of difficult to debug. The sync engine should have done all that. Go on, baby, just do it for me. You know you want to. Let's resume it, and this time I'm gonna suspend and shut down. Turn the phone off again. So in this compelling demo, as you can see, oh, the screen has gone off this time. You can see how this really, how this data roaming works. Yeah, well, it will. Why don't we come back to that? It will do it. As you can see, it's not instantaneous. It's not playing ball. What's this thing called? Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll leave it in the background. And it's, as you can see, the phone is currently set, and the Windows app hasn't quite been notified yet that that's happened. So we'll leave it to think about that, and then we'll come back to it when, if it ever updates. So roaming settings is good for, like I said, up to 100K. You can do small files. You can do just use the settings dictionary. For bigger stuff, there's the Live SDK. So you can actually, and that's got single sign-on again. So you, if you use it in your app, because the phones and the tablets are already tend to be associated with a Microsoft account, they won't need to log in all over again. But you can just automatically straight away go up to their OneDrive and store stuff up there. So you can use OneDrive as a common repository as well. Right, in a minute, let's talk about HTTP client. So, has this done it yet? No. HTTP client then. So now this is where you want to get down and really sort of do raw HTTP calls. So HTTP client API is in the Windows runtime. Actually, there's two of them, as it turns out. So I'm going to talk about the one you should be using. HTTP client, there's one in, there's a .NET HTTP client, and there's a Windows runtime HTTP client. And the Windows runtime one is better and more featured. So this is the Windows runtime one. Well, one nice thing is you can in its simplest use, you can new it up and just call get string async. I mean, I've got an example of setting a header on there as well. So you can just get a string from a remote server. Couldn't be simpler. This is it. So when you just type in HTTP client, you need to resolve it. Make sure you pick the right one. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with system.net.http.http client. But it's ever so slightly different in its most basic use. But actually, when you get into more advanced stuff, it's really quite different. So the kind of investment, if you like, is more on the windows.web.http client. So when you resolve it, make sure that you pick the right one. So that was a simple example I showed you a minute ago. If you want to get the full response, then you can actually, instead of calling get string async, you call get async, and that gives you back this HTTP response message object. And that you can then drill into that and get all of the headers and all the content stream and sort of status code and is success status code and all this kind of stuff. So if you want to get, you know, a bit more under the covers, then this is the way you do it. For example, you could read all the response headers out of it there just by enumerating the response.headers property. You saw on the first slide in this little section, setting headers is actually what's really nice about HTTP client is it's got this strongly typed headers. So you strongly typed method of setting it. You've got headers dot and then the header. There's a property for each particular header. So user agent, the example here. And then for all of them, you can then call try parse add and you give it a string and it will check that what you're trying to set it to actually makes sense for that particular header. So there's a bit of validation going on rather than the annoying thing where you could get simple little programming errors in the past with just getting the names wrong. So that's kind of a nice one. I've got another demo here to show you. This thing seems to have finally caught up with life. So while we were chatting, it actually did that. It would go back the other way, potentially, because the high priority one. I'm going to give it 10 seconds to do that. And then I'm going to give up on it. So there's a bit of a lag in the roaming data, but You definitely want to work this into your apps. You have to need to kill it or something? I don't know. Killing it is not a bad idea anyway. Right, bored with you. Moving on. Okay. So, next one. So this is an example of how you might use HTTP client in a kind of more robust way. So it's very, very simple. What we're doing is going off to get a image which is out on the interwebs. It's this big, big image. And what we're doing in the code is we are download and scale method. So go to the definition of that, which is a custom method in this particular class. And we are using an HTTP client. We are using get async to that particular URI where that image is. But then we're getting the content stream as a buffer. And then we're creating an in-memory random access stream. We are writing the buffer we've got from the web into that in-memory, so we've got it in-memory, and then we're using a bitmap decoder to work against that memory stream. We are transforming our bitmap, and we're scaling it to a particular width and height. Now, one reason why you might want to do this is if you've got a background task that is downloading images from the web and is sizing them for showing on a tile, they need to be specific dimensions. And that varies, of course, for the screen resolution of the device as well. So this is the code you would use to size to a particular width and height an image that you downloaded. I'm actually going to show it onto the screen. That's what we're doing. So run that on the emulator. And it's not terribly excited. We just get it, and it's doing all that code, and there's our image. And it's particularly sized exactly at the perfect resolution for that particular phone. So that's one example of how you might use HTTP client right getting down to the stream. I've got another demo in just a minute where we use it in its simplest form. So further things about HTTP client. You can send any of the HTTP verbs, get, delete, put, head, options, patch, post, put, and all this kind of stuff. So you can do that in the way shown there. And you can also use send request async like that. That's just a very scratching the surface of what you can do. HTTP client actually is this massive processing pipeline, and you can plug code into different parts of that processing pipeline to change the way that it's behaving. You can do 503 retry filters. The red stuff in the middle is stuff you could do, or you can have a special authentication filter in there as well. There's one supplied out of the box called HTTP-based protocol filter. This is also one of those, it's an example, but it's one that's given to you, and that is very useful because you can do things like compression, and you always want to do compression. Do not ever, 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 you allow for me to answer to if you don't use compression on the wire, for reasons I will go into in a little bit in a few moments. But this is how you do it. You simply new up an HTTP-based protocol filter, set the automatic decompression property on it to true, and that simple flag will enable all kinds of magic. And what actually it does is it puts a request header onto the request going out to the server, and it puts an accept header on it that says, I accept gzip or deflate and any of the compressed formats. So then the server will get this request and it'll look at that header, and if it supports compression, and not all services do, then it will compress it on the server and send back a compressed payload. And then on the receiving side, HTTP client will automatically decompress that for you. So that one property has a huge benefit in terms of the volume of data you're transferring over the wire. You can also set credentials on a call using this base protocol filter, as shown there with a password credential object. Set some creds in there, put that onto the base protocol filter, and then to use it, to apply it to the HTTP client, you just use the override of the constructor, which takes a base protocol filter object in the constructor, and then you just use HTTP client in the regular way. And speaking about compression, all that kind of good stuff, making smart decisions about data transfer. So this, for you as a solution developer, you need to think a lot about what you're transferring over the wire and for what purpose. So, again, I keep saying this, mobile devices are often connected to poor quality network connections. I live in the mountains of North Wales, and around there, a good quality network connection is, well, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And I have to go to one of the towns on the coast where we have got, 4G in a couple of places, not many actually, or then over to Manchester and Liverpool where we've got proper cities where they do have this kind of stuff. But, it's patchy. You can't rely on it. So you want to build an app assuming the worst case. So don't assume fast network connectivity, and don't sit there on your laptop and you're connected to, you're on a PC, you're developing this app, it's plugged into the internet, it's super fast. No, you've got to assume it's going to be a bad quality connection. So in terms of, A, keeping the user's data costs down, the bill, if they're on a cellular data connection, but B, and probably more importantly, that they get a good user experience, so that if they are downloading any data from a server somewhere, it happens as quickly as possible. There's two things you want to do. Is make sure that the data you're transferring is appropriate, and also use compression. So about being appropriate, too often people are a bit lazy. Now, you've got somebody's developed a web service, a REST service, and it spits out all this data. Actually, on the client, you only need 5% of that data, but too often you'll download all of it, and then it's just wasted. It's wasted on the wire. You didn't need it. So you might want to create custom methods on your REST service, if you own the service, to send down just what's needed by the client. That would make sense. And even if you don't own the service, you could think about putting an intermediary service of your own in there to act as a gateway and sort of filter and shape that data, that response, before sending it back to you. So these are all good things. And just to drill this home, I've got this demo. It's one I've used before, so I apologize if you've seen it, but it's too good not to use again. So this next demo uses HTTP client. Also on the server side, we've got an OData service. Okay, we're done with you. Go away. So the service here, I can view this in the browser, and it will... And there we go. So let's make that a bit bigger. Oh, do you want to see what I'm doing? No. I was enjoying myself there. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So there you go. So what I'm doing, I've just shown this in the browser. This is my service, which is an OData. It's a WCF data service. And then I've got a phone client. The OData service, I can view that in the browser. And what it does is it opens up the root of my service, and it's our old friend, the Northwind database. So if you want to have a look, we've got the URI of the base of the service, and we can go and look at the suppliers. And you just change the URI, and now it'll give you all a list of the suppliers. You want to look at a particular supplier, you can kind of put an index into there. So I'll look at the third supplier. Just the third supplier. And you notice you also get all these other cross-references to it. So if you want to know the products that supplier supplies, well, it tells you what the URI needs to be. So you get all this other referencing information that helps you to navigate the relationships between the data sets in this service. So it's really cool. And it makes for very nice, flexible solutions. And the other interesting thing about this is that it has a WCF data service, or OData services, have the ability to serialize the data on the wire in a number of different ways. And this is what the client is all about. So I'm going to run it on the emulator. The UI won't win any awards, but the point is I've got four ways of calling. I'm going to get the supplier's data down from this service. I'm interested in just the supplier's data, the table. So I've got four buttons that do it different ways. The first one, this is the code we're going to use. We are using HTTP client. We're using getString async. We're going off to this URI, and we're getting back. And I'm interested in the length of the URI. First of all, can anybody notice on this what is the amazing difference from Windows Phone 8? Anybody? What about that URI? Is anything unusual about the URI? Well, you guys clearly have never developed a Windows Phone 8 app where you have tried to hit a service running on your own box. Yeah? Localhost. Yes, I'm a top red localhost. This is amazing. This is amazing because In Windows Phone 8, you couldn't do localhost. I mean, actually, you shouldn't be able to do localhost, because localhost means the same machine. It means, you know, the same machine where you're running. Now, this code is running on a phone. What, have we got a web server on the phone all of a sudden? No, of course we haven't. But what they've done, they've just done this convenience for you, working in the emulator. It probably works with the phone, you'll work with the phone as well. So if you're connected up by USB connection or a virtual connection, as the emulator is, you can now use localhost in your code. Now, that seems like a small thing, but in Windows Phone 8, you had to use the host name, you had to open the firewall, you had to do a URI reservation. It was a complete pain. It was ways too hard to do. But now they've really made it simple. But anyway, that's an aside. So that's a nice convenience we've got. Now, what I'm really interested in is, this is the payload we've got here. So I'm going to compare them. So this is the first one, which is exactly the same we saw in the browsers. This is called Atom Feed. This is also the verbose form. It's exactly what we saw in the browser. And I'm interested in how big it is. So I've got a little message. This is a Silverlight app. I've got a message box, which shows us how big it is. 28K, well, 29K, to get just the supplier's data. This is the same one, but what we've done, we've added a header onto it called, we say, yeah, I want this data exactly the same, we're still getting the suppliers, but I want it in JSON, and I want all that cross-reference link stuff. This used to be the only way you could do JSON. JSON is much better. We've now got 15.5K for the same data. Now, what about this one? This one is just application/JSON, not the format is verbose, so that differs from the previous one by not having this on it. But we're still going to exactly the same URI. And that one is 8K. And the final one is the same thing, but the payload looks like this, because I compressed it on the server. So this is compressed data, and that one is 4K for the same data. It's like, duh, which one would you use? So I think my point is made. And actually, just to drill this home a little bit as well, I've got, in the tools, you can do, this is a nice thing you can do as well, network emulation. We can enable a 2G network. So we're simulating a relative, well, it's good quality, but it's still 2G, so it's going to be pretty poor quality. So I can do that again, but we can just count how long it takes to get the data. So with the most compact one, if we count until we hit the breakpoint, it's like it's 1 second. Okay, less than one, half a second to get that one. But with the more verbose one, did I need to start the app again? I forget now. We'll see if this works. 1, 2, 3 seconds. And that's a tiny payload. So, you know, expand that out to a more realistic payload that you might be getting from a service, and you can see the value of getting that, using JSON, using compression. It all adds up to a good user experience, and they will love your app and give you 5 stars, which is what we all want. Or if you're enterprise, obviously you've got happy users of that, of your enterprise app. So there we go. Just a confirmation of that, just to drill home the kind of deltas you've got, where you're just thinking about, and that's exactly the same fields. Top that with the, you know, maybe only sending some of the fields you're interested in, and you can get dramatic decreases in the amount of data you're sending over the wire. All right, next little topic in this, and this is just about making your apps be intelligent about the network, the state of the network. So you need to, you know, make decisions about functionality you're offering. So first of all, obviously, if you currently the app is running and you haven't got a network, what you don't want to do is have them use a tapper button to say refresh or something, and they're just watching the little blips going across the screen, and it's like 20, 30 seconds, and then finally the HTTP call that you made under the wrappers will time out, and then you tell them, I'm sorry, I can't get your data right now. Well, you could have saved them that frustration, because you can find out whether you've got a network before you even make the call. So do that, and that's the network interface type object, so you can use that. And there's this network change event, which fires whenever the network is gained or dropped. So do a little bit. It's not a lot of work you have to do. Just try and think about this as well. This is some code that uses the networkinformation.getInternetConnectionProfile method. This is a Windows runtime method. Everything I'm showing you works on big Windows and Windows Phone. get internet connection profile, and first thing, the first if statement in there is crucially important. If internet connection profile is null, then you haven't got an internet connection. Okay, so that's the easy way of figuring out whether we've got a connection or not. And again, Windows Phone 8, I think you had to kind of had to effectively do a DNS or ping Microsoft.com or something to figure out whether you've got connectivity or not. So it's now very easy. You can check whether you're connected to a roaming data connection. So maybe the user's turned on roaming. I mean, you won't have an internet connection if they've turned it off in phone settings. But maybe they've turned on, they've enabled data on a roaming connection, but you're kind of concerned about the size of the data, so you might want to put up a message to the user and say, I see that you're on roaming. Do you want to continue with this, or do you want to wait until we get on Wi-Fi? So that's the kind of things you can do. So the way you figure out whether you're on a roaming connection is shown in that is connected to data roaming method. You get your internet connection profile. You then get the, if you're on a wireless WAN connection profile, that means you're on cellular data. Then you can get the get connection cost, and that's got a property on it of roaming. So you can sort of drill down the objects and figure out what kind of connection is currently being used. Coupled with this is this thing called data sense. So data sense is a whole solution that involves the mobile network operator. They put a server in that kind of caches and compresses content. So when somebody's using the Internet Explorer on the device, they'll get compressed cached content from the mobile operator servers. And it also involves, and there's some apps on the phone, it also involves you as a developer. So the components include these apps that the user can use, which is DataSense, so they can look at how much cellular data and Wi-Fi data that they have used. And they can, so they get real information about their bill and how close they are to hitting their any, you can set a data limit, the third screen there, and the one in the middle, you can set a data limit, and it will warn you when you're getting near. And all this is part of the end user bits. But you can also then, in your apps, you can build a data smart application. There are three scenarios you want to think about. You might be a content streaming app, so you want your like sort of one of the Netflixes of this world, where you're streaming high volumes of data. Or you might be a file sharing app, OneDrive or Dropbox, although if you want to share files, I would suggest you want to look at the background transfer service as your first port of call. In order to do those transfers. Or you might be an app that maybe you only want to do something on Wi-Fi, so you've got a lot of content to download, maps to bring to the device, or some kind of big content, so you want that to happen only on Wi-Fi. So I'm going to look at one of those scenarios, because all of these APIs that we've already looked at help you to sort of give these different usage scenarios. If you look about the content streaming scenario, you want to do something like this. Get the internet connection profile. Again, check whether it's null. So it's not null. We know we've got an internet connection. Then we find, are we on wireless LAN? So you say internet connection profile dot is WLAN connection profile. If we are on wireless LAN, you can double check that it's not a metered Wi-Fi hotspot. So you can get the connection cost. And if the connection cost is unknown or unrestricted, then we're good. It's a free Wi-Fi, and you can just stream your content, and you know you're not costing a user any money. Then we've got the else. If we're on wireless WAN, so if we're on roaming data, oh, there's some squares. There you go. I forgot about them. If we're on wireless WAN, there we go. Then we get the connection cost. If we're not roaming, we can look at if it's unrestricted or unknown, then we know that we're on your home network, or you know this, we're not this we're assuming a free network. Again, you can just start working away. Or if we are on a fixed cost network, then you can see whether they're over the data limit or not. So then you can be really friendly to users and say, I'm sorry, I can see you're very close to your data limit. You haven't got enough credit left to actually continue this. You may wish to connect to Wi-Fi in order to complete this operation. So these are the kind of APIs you can work to sort these to do these kind of things. All right, identity and authentication. This is the last topic in this whirlwind tour of stuff. So identity is two things. You might actually have a secure app with some secure content, so you authenticate against Active Directory, and then you're allowed to get at some stuff that shouldn't be exposed to unauthorized people. That's kind of that's an obvious use for identity and authentication. But actually, the other one is more subtle than that. If you are creating a sports app, sports result app, you know, and you want the user to be able to enter their preferences for what teams they're really interested in, well, that's cool, but you then need to send those preferences back to the back end in order to filter in your back end logic, figure out when those particular teams score a goal or win a game or something. Then you need to know that this user is interested and send messages to that user. So that means you've got to store their identity in your back end server in some way. You need to be able to identify them. So in this case, well, what do? You've got two things you can do. You could actually have your own login username and password and get them to register and enter yet another password, which would probably be the same as they've used on every other service, but, you know, they've got their own username and on this sort of thing, and you could maintain your own database of usernames and passwords, but that would be, you know, something you don't really want to do, and also it's bad for the user because it's yet another username and password they have to remember. So if in that kind of scenario, maybe it's better to allow them to authenticate against Facebook or Twitter or something, which you can do, and a lot of apps do this, you know. So, you know, we need this, but users don't like having to sign on all the time. So we want to make it as easy as possible. Yes, they need to authenticate once, probably, against some network, and then that's enough for you to know who they are. You send their identity to the back end and use that in your data storage to filter out and make decisions about what to send them. So coupled with all of these, and in this topic, first of all, I'm just going to talk very briefly about Credential Locker. So this is a new API for phone, but obviously one that we have on Windows, which is a nice one for storing and roaming. This data roaming that didn't work before comes back into this. So it's windows.security.credentials.credentialLocker and allows secure storage, credential isolation, and roaming. So what this is a kind of a service that's linked to your Microsoft account. Each app stores credential objects into the credential locker, and both of them are sandboxed from each other. There's no way that any one app can see the credentials for another app. But the cute thing is that those credentials also roam, again, through the Microsoft account, this linked account thing, roams across the trusted devices. So when they've entered those credentials just once on the tablet, they're automatically available next time they run the phone app. They don't have to log in again there. So that's a nice, real nice feature about that. To use it, couldn't be simpler. You've got Password Vault is the object that kind of encapsulates the credential locker, and you store into that password credential objects. And to get stuff out of the vault, there's a number of methods. An example here, you can find all by the resource name, the sort of key name that you've used to when you've stored it in there. So I'm not going to show you this. It's too trivial to show you. I have got a demo of that, but I'm going to move on just to talk about the web authentication broker. So this is where you are authenticating against Facebook, Twitter, etc. And this is the one I was talking about, where many apps would allow users to authenticate against them because they're not going to forget their Twitter password and this sort of thing. You just need to have some kind of know who they are kind of logic. But you could also use this as well if you actually want to use their REST APIs to interact directly with Facebook or Twitter and the like. So typically, the way you've built this, has anybody tried to do this, implement OAuth authentication against any providers? You're lucky. It's not easy. Well, it wasn't easy until we got the web authentication broker. So typically what happens is you've got your service provider. You start by sending an authorization request, which is an HTTP request to the online service provider. They then pop up a web page where you put in the username and your credentials, and the online service, so the user enters their credentials, the online service then authenticates that and puts up an authorization page. This is where you see this app wants to have access to your contacts, blah, 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 and you say, yeah, I'm cool with that. So the user decides that, yes, they're happy to go ahead with this. And then the online service sends back an authorization token to the originator, and thereafter the app can actually use that token to access services on that online service provider. Phew. Now, the trouble with all of this is that typically when you build this yourself, you've had to have a kind of a web browser control in, on a page to handle all this sort of stuff. It's not very secure because that's part of the same, it's all in the same context as your foreground app. And really, you don't want to know that anything, you don't want anything to do with their authentication. You just want to know whether they have authenticated or not. So it's not so good. So there's no single sign-on with that, and there's no roaming of the credentials or anything, and it's complicated to implement. So the solution is this web authentication broker, which takes all the pain out of this. And it's got a load of benefits. It does support single sign-on, so you can log on once and then not have to elsewhere. It's a very simple API. The credentials are isolated, and it doesn't say it there, but the credentials roam as well, just the same as the credential locker and the things. And what we've done, basically, is stuck a big box around all that bit. So that's what the web authentication broker does. It handles that bit for you. Yay. Yeah, it is. It's a cool thing. There's a little interesting thing about programming this across the two platforms. This is one of the few cases where usage actually differs on Windows and Windows Phone. And the reason for this is that on Windows Phone, we have to maintain some good support and for low-end devices, the 512 meg devices. So that means a change in the flow. So on the left, you can see Windows, where you just new up the web authentication broker, call authenticate async. No, you don't new it up. It's a static method to call authenticate async. You just await that, and then you get the response back. So that couldn't be easier. We have these and continue methods in Windows Phone 8.1, which is the problem with low-end devices is that stuff can get swapped out and suspended and terminated, and it also tends to be a full-page experience rather than a pop-up for on the phone. So what actually happens is we have an authenticate and continue method, which is not an asynchronous, we just call it, and immediately after that, we kind of control switches over to the component. It takes over the interaction with the user, and your original app is suspended. Could be terminated. So later on, when the web authentication broker has finished what it does and the authentication has happened, your original app gets reactivated, and you carry on. Then you carry on just the same point. So the code you get back into the same flow we were after we awaited on the Windows one for the authenticate async. So thereafter you just carry on. So this is the logic you do on a phone. In the unactivated, when you get reactivated, you have to see. I mean, there's a number of ways you can get activated in a Windows runtime app, but you're looking for a specific activation for a web authentication broker continuation, which is what it is. And the indication for that is the iActivated event args is a web authentication broker continuation event args. Now, all the rest of the code on that slide are just standard bootstrapping code. The important stuff is this one, where you've got the lines at the bottom, where basically you pass those continuation args onto the target page. So that you put a property on the page which is of type web authentication broker continuation event args and just stick it onto that property. So then on that page, this is where the page where the web authentication broker was originally started from, we've got this property. If you look at the setter there on that continuation args property, you'll see that when the unactivated event in app.xaml.cs sets that property on the page, that's going to cause the continue web authentication method to execute. So then we're carrying on just the same as if we awaited the async method for Windows. So a little bit of a complication there, but it all works out. The user experience, though, is that it's just as if you've got an embedded web browser control in your app, except it's all done for you by the broker. Also, it does save the credentials pre-populated if any app previously authenticated. So that's all very cool. So I've got a little demo of this. I'd advise you to look. This is one of the cases where the SDK sample is awesome, because the web authentication broker is still only part of the story. So this is my main page where off my game today. Terrible. Right, there we go. Thank you. So here we go with we are. Where are we going? Web authentication broker. Authenticate and continue. And then at this point we'll terminate, and then this is where in app.xaml, when we come back, we will look for onactivated, we'll fire. Actually, this solution uses this thing called Continuation Manager, which does the same logic we saw on the slides, but in a more in a better sort of a way. So this one, I just have a simple, turn that off, authenticate against it. So here we are. This is where we're logging in. This is the method. If we have previously logged in, we look for some stuff stored in our roaming settings because we want to roam this across. That's not what I expected. Right, hang on. It's because I practiced this before. That's what the problem is. I'm sorry? I think I unchecked that. Anyway, I'm going to kill the emulator because then there's no sort of stored credentials that are messing things up. Start a new instance of this. Shouldn't take too long. And here we go. And we run it. We authenticate. And I'm just going to let it run because I already walked through all that code. Now this is the web authentication broker. So my app's suspended. I'm not in the game at this point. So I put and I've created a special Twitter account just so that I can use it for this. I've got to remember what the credentials are though. Okay. Andy, jump start and. I don't mind revealing this password to you because it's just it's not my real Twitter account. There we go. And I can say remember me as well, so we can authorize the app. This is where the roaming thing happens. If you do this in full site, this is going to roam right across all my devices as well. And we're authenticated, and we've got a nice, this is our actually token, this sort of thing. So I can actually stop the app and do it all over again, and the second time we do it, then I hit the authenticate, and this time it's going to get the token out of the roaming settings, and obviously we've got this sort of single sign-on experience, so the user doesn't have to go through all that again. But now we know who they are, so now we can do all that cool stuff I was talking about the sports results or something like that. Now, sadly, I am actually behind time on this, so I did promise you a little bit of NFC and Bluetooth. Unfortunately, I haven't got that. If anybody wants to talk to me about that, I am very happy to talk about that and got some great demos. And I'll also be at the Ask the Experts tonight. So just in summary, what I did show you was intro to Azure Mobile Services, HTTP client, a bit of roaming data. That sadly didn't work. Network information, credential locker and authentication, the web authentication broker. And I would have talked about NFC and Bluetooth. So thank you very much for listening. I hope that was interesting and informative for you. We've got lots of track resources. We have got a lot of related content. This afternoon at the middle session, I'm talking about Build for Both in this room. So please come along to that if you're interested in that. I will be asking the experts this evening as well if you want to talk about any sort of stuff. Please complete an evaluation. You have a chance to win Xbox One and gift cards and that sort of thing. If you wish to scan this QR code, you can, and that is an easy way of getting to that. And this point, apparently you need to use, if you've got an 8.1 phone, you need to bring up the camera and then go to lenses and go to the Bing Vision and then you can scan it. Yeah, that's right. Because I heard this yesterday. Somebody says, well, how do you do it? And I said, well, I don't know. I haven't done it. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. So I'll take any questions. If you'd like to just go to the microphone, please, if you wouldn't mind. And thank you all very much. Thanks a lot.
The web request authentication broker, does that work for if you're connecting to like a hosted ADFS 2.0, like a passive? Or is it only for these providers that do OAuth?
It's only for OAuth, as far as I know, yes.
Okay.
I'm not a super expert in this space, so I'll check that out, but I believe it's just for OAuth.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
So you showed us the Twitter one.
Yeah.
Now, why not just use, they're all logged in with their Microsoft account on their phone, why not just use that account? Or is there a seamless way to do that?
Yes, so there is single sign-on with the Microsoft account. That's through the Live SDK, so that... You don't ever need to ask them for credentials, really, because the phone will be logged in and the tablet is kind of logged into your Microsoft account. So there is single sign-on through the Live SDK for...
So we wouldn't even have to prompt them for anything if they
Exactly, that's right. And that's...
It's a better experience.
That's a better experience, again. You're quite right, yes. Yeah.
And what about, you were showing us the HTTP compression. Is there, what would you use on your dev machine here to see if it's being compressed or not?
I use Fiddler, and actually, if you want to hunt out my session, I did one last year at TechEd, which was based on Windows Phone 8 networking, and I actually did have a session in that where I talked about configuring it. It's just a couple of steps. You have to configure it as a reverse proxy, so there is a couple of little, you have to allow, Fiddler doesn't accept connections from external machines by default. So there's a couple of check boxes you have to do in Fiddler to say, oh yeah, accept set remote connections, and then you can watch the stuff that's going on.
Including the localhost, now that localhost is supported and all that?
Yeah, that should work. So should work just fine, yeah. All right.
I have one quick question.
Yeah, sure.
When they publish the session, are there going to be any links to any of, like you said, you mentioned Bluetooth demos.
Yes.
Are those going to be up on the session or anywhere we can access them to have a look later?
Yeah, so a question about Bluetooth demos and that sort of thing. So the best answer for that is if you hunt out my Jumpstart videos, which are on Channel 9, it's aka.mswp81js. I don't expect you to remember that, but anyway, that's for the recording. On there, there's videos, there's a whole session on proximity about NFC and Bluetooth, and... There's also some demos associated with that. I'll also post on my blog, andywigley.com, to give you a bit more on that.
Thanks.
Do you think that Microsoft will ever revive the Sync framework and bring SQL Compact Edition to Windows Phone and Windows 8?
Do I ever think we'll likely to revive it? I don't think well, Sync is a big ask, and the Azure Mobile Services is doing a Sync solution, yet another one. How many do we need, you know? It's like, I'm not aware of any plans to sort of bring back the Sync framework. The Sync framework actually it was a standard, and you know, it probably wouldn't be beyond us to build one out for WinRT clients. That hasn't happened as yet. So I'm not aware of any moves to kind of fill that gap at the moment, except we are well aware that it's a pain point for people. And that's why Azure is doing it, and hopefully we'll see a more general solution come along in due course, but I don't have any information or anything.
I ported a Windows Store App 8 to phone, and I had to redo the bitmap decoder, which you used in your code, and the HTTP chunking, it wasn't supported on phone 8. And now because they're the same, I'm assuming both those are going to be supported.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you've got the full shooting match you've got on in WinRT, big Windows. So.
Okay, and what about NFC on, is that now unified also on between phone and big Windows?
NFC, yes, it is unified. There's kind of a little bit of a complication with that at the moment. Some of the new stuff that's coming in with NFC that's in Phone 8.1, I think isn't in Windows yet. It's kind of one of those things where Windows Phone 8.1 has gone a bit ahead of what's in Windows, and that's the ability to read kind of transit cards and stored value cards and sort of low-level NFC. Communication. There's kind of various standards that are supported in Phone 8.1 at the API level, but from phone devices point of view, the current devices that are out there haven't got the right kind of NFC chipset in them and the right drivers. So We are going to have to wait for to get full benefit of all the features that are in Phone 8.1. We're going to have to wait for newer devices that are probably going to hit market later this year.
So, for example, the typical Nokia phones right now, they don't have the right hardware.
Exactly.
That's right.
So I did a demo in the Jumpstart where they gave me an engineering device, a preview device that was a special machine with the new chipset in it and the new drivers, but they're not going to be on general availability. But I mean, there's loads and loads of other cool stuff you can do with that.
Just in general, is there very much difference between Phone 8.1 and Phone 8 on NFC capabilities? Is that what you're just talking about?
Yeah. So everything that we could do with 8. Carries forward. That was one of the ones where we were already aligned on WinRT API. So you've got all of that and a lot more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.